Agro wasn't sure why Trico was curious about this or why he couldn't ask Chris this question directly, but she figured she could do this favor for him. Well, perhaps it was because Trico wasn't the one lost in the woods with them and then didn't see the meteorite, and that was nearly a year ago, and Agro didn't want to dwell on that. So the question remained, who was Chris's favorite Sonic character? Okay, it was probably Knuckles. Matt liked Knuckles, and they have mutual interest. No, wait. They don't always do. Okay, it had to be Shadow. Chris liked the robot named after a fish or something, and they both had black designs. Edgy? They were pretty much the same. Yeah, it was definitely Shadow. In any case, Agro decided to find a time when Chris looked somewhat distracted, probably Googling a calendar when the next full moon was, and asked the question completely unprompted. Okay, Chris, who is your favorite Sonic character? Silver. Agro paused to make sure she heard correctly. From Sonic the Hedgehog 2006? Chris then stared at Agro, irritated. Yeah, he debuted there, but that doesn't mean I played 06 or would like to? Well, you could have. You like that one bad game with the dragons and the cursing and the sex? That's not the same.
Oof, it's not.
Frustrated at how wrong she was, Agro huffed and trotted out of the room. She asked one more to be completely sure. Is it really Shadow, though? No! If you had any questions about my favorite Sonic character, well, I will not go into them now because we are not covering Sonic 2006 or any new Sonic games.
But I guess my question is, like, where did you get Silver exposure for, if not from 2006? I guess
we'll answer that in the Sonic History part of the podcast.
Sure.
But yeah, this is the AgroCast podcast. I'm your host, Chris, and I'm accompanied by Matt. We'll be covering instead Sonic the Hedgehog CD. But first, Matt, how have you been doing this month?
I haven't been doing too bad. It's been pretty much playing the hell out of Elden Ring. But before I discuss that, I finished Wonder Labyrinth, Record of Lodoss War, Deedlet in Wonder Labyrinth. And it's a pretty short game, but it's a lot of fun. The bosses are really good. Lots of cool weapons to find, but it's quite compact. But yeah, I enjoyed it quite a bit. It's really, really, really inspired by Symphony of the Night, even down to sort of the after images that Deedlet leaves behind during certain things. But it's a lot of fun. I'm going to go back through it eventually. I've consumed some Lodoss media since then, so I'll have a better frame of reference for playing it again. But yeah, it was pretty good. I just started Kirby and the Forgotten Land. I just got past the first boss. It was pretty cool. I haven't made a lot of progress because I'm really intent on completing all of the side objectives in every stage before moving on. And for some reason, I could not find this fucking tulip, this tulip in the first level that I had to make bloom.
I'm trying to imagine what is happening in this Kirby game that you need to let a tulip bloom.
Well, it's just a side goal. You have to touch like four tulips and make them all bloom, and you get a, you know, an extra Waddle Dee for Waddle Dee Town. And for the life of me, I couldn't find it. And when I finally found it and how obvious it was thinking, there's no hope for me if it took me going through the first stage four times to find a flower. So maybe I'm a bit frazzled from playing Elden Ring the better part of the month. So I didn't play any Kirby tonight, and I'm just going to play it very, very casually and find things before I move on. There's little challenges for using your abilities, and they also have a sub-goal on them to beat them in a certain amount of time. So I've been doing that, and I don't know if they do anything other than give me 50 coins, which is extremely trivial, but I can't move on until I get that time. So there's that. I want to play a nice, relaxing Kirby game, and it is. But I'm making it less relaxing for myself, I guess.
I think that's kind of the thing about Kirby games, is that they can be really fun as a casual playthroughs, but they always have this extra thing that just drives you up a wall for some reason.
Well, it's not so much the ability challenges are driving up the wall. Sometimes the time limits are very precise to what you can do with the abilities, or at least to my capabilities with these abilities. And I like that. I like how much they force you to learn these abilities. It's been really cool.
Maybe I just have a lot of bad memories from Helper to Hero and Superstar Ultra and has never left me to this day.
Yeah. I haven't actually played that. My younger brother's a real Kirby fan, but yeah, there's still a lot of Kirby I haven't played, but this was a new one, and honestly, it was the game I was looking forward to the most this year, believe it or not, so I'm just going to take my time and enjoy it. It's just going to be fun. I've kind of, especially after Return to Dreamland, I was kind of like, yeah, there's no expectations for difficulty, but Kirby games always do find a way to add, again, those extra elements that at least make them a little bit more engaging or perhaps embarrassing when you can't find a flower.
But, yeah, it's been some time since I last played a new Kirby game, but from experience, it's always the standard Kirby games always seem to deliver, and the experimental ones are always give or take on your personality.
Yeah, no, Kirby's lucky in that respect that he can be in these experimental games. Like Canvas Curse, the DS game where you guide the Kirby ball, that's actually a really fun game, and it was one of my favorite games I had early on my DS, so yeah. Well, like Kirby anyway, so it's been fun. It's been fun, and it's been hard not to smile. But for the most part, what I've been playing has been Elden Ring.
Maybe we could make this a joint discussion if we're going to be discussing Elden Ring.
Well, I won't mention too much. I did enjoy it quite a bit. Now, there's moments in the game, or rather areas and kind of design choices that I disagree with a little bit. Like, there's always rough edges in these FromSoft games, but it didn't really impact my overall enjoyment of it. I have hang-ups with open-world games, which I've discussed on the podcast before. Elden Ring's not really devoid of that, but it does alleviate a lot of it. Like, I don't like getting a checklist on these open-world games, and the way that Elden Ring works, I was able to interpret the topography on the maps, I was able to interpret that and decide where I want to go, and, you know, I could recognize, like, this shape is probably a church, and this shape is probably a mine, and it usually paid off, or you talk to people in the world, and you can buy notes that hint at certain things to go, and I prefer that than just having 1,000 icons on the map, because
Even though right now there are 1,000 icons on the map, but yeah.
sure. If they're all sites of grace, maybe, but
yeah.
You know, but having a lot of like busy work on the map, I don't like that. I like kind of finding my own way. And for the most part, Elden Ring really let me do that. There is more guidance in Elden Ring, and I know you're probably going to have something to say about that, but there's more guidance in Elden Ring than a lot of other FromSoft games.
I don't know if there really is guidance so far, because I've only had one story direction, but then again, despite my hour time, I'm very early in the game, so.
Yeah, but they all point to important locations, so you can kind of prioritize where you want to go. If you go to where the first set of grace point you to market the Fell Omen, which really, he feels more like a mid to late game boss than other FromSoft games. In terms of his moveset and all of that, obviously you can beat him straight out of the gate, and if you're familiar with FromSoft games, he's not so bad. But a lot of sites touted Elden Ring as the most newcomer-friendly game yet, and it is.
I'd argue it is, definitely, yeah.
There's a lot of ways to circumvent these places. You can go right past Stormveil Castle, or you can find some Spirit Ashes if you want to take advantage of that system, or you can find Ashes of War if you want to take advantage of that system. Like, Stormveil is completely optional. You can do other
There's
things.
There's a ton of caves everywhere that you could fight smaller bosses
There's
in.
There's a ton of caves, but there are also sites or reports that said it's the easiest From Software game yet, and that's not the case. Some of the late game fights for people that are fresh to the series will be quite trying. And Mark at the Fell Omen, if you just, you know, boot it right to the Stormveil Castle out of the gate, you've never played this game before, or played this series before, rather, or a Souls-like, I guess I should say, then Mark at the Fell Omen would be a real learning experience to play it. As long as you don't get tilted, you can really learn some of what the game wants you to do. But I can imagine some people got rinsed.
That story is just so comical to me, because when I finally figured out how to get to Stormvale, because if anyone finds out how I play, it's ridiculous that I explored the entire map and apparently did not go to Stormvale. But in any case, yeah, so Margit was essentially the second boss I encountered, ignoring the bosses on the overworld. Because my first boss was a goddamn hitbox mess in a small room, and I was just like, I would gladly take Margit as my first boss over this.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Margit is completely fine in his positioning in the game. I'm just thinking about brand new players that are just following the allotted line, right? Which seems counterintuitive to me. Your first time playing an open world game, to just take the critical path, because there's a lot to find and there's a lot to explore, but I know people are anxious to push into the more meaningful content. But yeah.
Ooh, yeah, yeah, who could not be?
Well, if you talk about yourself, you have to do a legacy dungeon to get that out of the way, and then you'll be, I think you'll breathe easier about this.
Yeah, anyhow, yeah.
Is what it is.
To add my thoughts about Elden Ring, I sort of cut off yours, yeah. So, I don't dislike the game. I have the unpopular opinion that I'm not wild about it. So I guess the discovery is that I don't like open world games, because I'm the kind of person who wants to see what all my options are at first and then organize them. And the way Elden Ring works is maybe there's too many options for someone like me, and I eventually hit a point where I did organize my entire list of things I could do, but it definitely took me a very long time, and that process I was not very happy with. First initial hours, I was like, this is pretty neat, I'm discovering things, but then after 5 hours, I'm going, how much stuff is in this game, and is this really necessary? And I know you could argue that the farther you go from Limgrave and Weeping Peninsula, that's where you should probably stick around. But if anyone knows how I play anything, if I see something remotely interesting, I will try to do it. I did do some progress in Limgrave and Weeping Peninsula at this point, but there's a part of me itching to go back to the more later game areas going, I could probably handle this with enough time. So it's not exactly... I don't know how I feel about Elden Ring right now. It's like, I don't think it's a bad game, but I'm not too attached to it right now.
Well, you said you've never really played through a more contemporary open world game, right?
No, I don't think I really have.
No. So, yeah, I said if you want to prioritize legacy dungeons as progress, like if you're on the Weeping Peninsula, you can go down to the Castle Morn. That's quite short. Or you can go to Stormvale. That's quite long. But, like, the mini dungeons are about 20 minutes, right? And they have good rewards. And
sort of. They all look the same after a while, but maybe that's my
It depends. Like, catacombs almost always have a spirit ash in them. And that depends if you want to use those summonings. Which,
I mean, again, this is only, like, Limgrave and Weeping Peninsula, so maybe they'll be more interesting in the later areas. Because I see some areas later on in the game, well, not later on in the game, later in farther out areas that I'm very interested about. Like, one place is kind of a handful, but I'm very interested in going there and getting my ass kicked.
If you can get the upgrade materials to get your gear on par with it, then, you know, go wild. Just do whatever you want.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's not completely open. There are certain things you have to do in order to do other certain events. But it is quite open. You can go quite far without doing anything. So, there is that. Myself, personally, I like getting lost. I try to put off the progress as much as I could. But getting towards the end of my playthrough, and like I said, I played this game pretty hard for this month. And getting towards the end of it, I was like, yeah, I just gotta, you know, put the nail in it, because otherwise, I'm going to burn out on it before I do another playthrough of it. So, I missed one major boss. It's a hidden boss, which I did after credits rolled, and I started looking some things up that I missed. And for the most part, I got a lot of what I would consider critical done. But like, there's stuff that I missed. Like, I found a rock version of a hammer that I used for most of after I picked it up. But I never found the base version of that hammer. But I know it exists because I've seen other people use it in videos. So it is what it is. I just gotta let myself collect myself again before I play through that game because, like I've explained before, I find open world games exhausting. And part of it is the breadth of them, and part of it is the completionist that I've been trying to quench or quell, right? Because that's why I didn't go after all the Koroks in Breath of the Wild, because it would have driven me mad. And I'm kind of glad that Breath of the Wild 2 was delayed for a few months because I don't need that in my life this year. Especially if I do another cycle or two of Elden Ring, right? So, but I enjoyed it quite a bit. It has some standout bosses in it, especially towards the end. It'll be interesting if you stick with it and see your opinion on some of the late game stuff.
It seems like I would like the later game stuff more too, yeah.
Well, maybe.
Yeah, so I'm not completely disregarding Elden Ring. It didn't have a very good beginning for me. Well, other than I went to the side dungeon first thing, and that was exciting until I really got my ass kicked. And the exploration was not exactly what I wanted because it was a little excessive, but still holding out some hope for it. Like, there'll be stuff I like, I think. And I'm hopeful for it, so.
It's got so much critical acclaim, but I think people are maybe a little reluctant to rag on a FromSoft game now. But of course, there are people that do for, more outrage articles and things like that about it. But
I've always accepted that I have some weird opinions, so you know what? If I don't
well,
like Elden Ring, that's fine.
no, of course, of course.
I like some things about it so far. There are a lot of things I don't like about it so far. But yeah, so whatever.
Which is par for the course with a FromSoft game. It's just that I think having played like all of the other Souls-like games by From, then you have certain expectations, and in Elden Ring, I think it's built on the Dark Souls 3 engine, and then it does so much that's familiar to Dark Souls, but then it does a lot of things that are different. And you just have to reconcile that it's a different game and a different thing, right? However, it's completely fine to not like Elden Ring. It just may not be your thing. It almost seems like there's this opinion that games have to be open world to be good nowadays, which is completely false. I usually prefer a more contained experience myself. I said I have my own personal hang-ups about them, but yeah, it's fine not to like it. If ultimately you don't like Elden Ring, you know that the next time they make a game, and with how successful this one's been, maybe they'll try the same kind of formula again. I hope not, because FromSoft is best when they're doing something new.
Oh, yeah.
You'll know that maybe you want to wait on it, right? But yeah, I guess I should say I enjoyed Elden Ring. Just to mention, because it was just all this proselytizing for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I ran a strength build, which has its own set of problems in Elden Ring, but I still pushed through and enjoyed it. I power stanced great hammers. Power stancing is back. It's lovely.
Oh, love
So
it. Oh, yes,
I
thanks.
power stanced great hammers. I power stanced great swords, and I did halberd and great shield. Those are the three ways I played.
Where the hell was your
Yeah.
large club, Matt?
Well, see, I played the large club so much in the previous games that
Did you
I
just switch
kind
it
of
up?
just,
Yeah.
yeah, it's like large club playthrough will be for like New Game Plus when I get a second one and can power stance them alone. So, but yeah, it's like eventually I was like, yeah, I'm just going to put the shield away. I'm just going to power stance everything. So that's how that ended up. To get off the subject of Elden Ring and to get onto the subject of the other title you were alluding to and your month in general, how has your month been, Chris?
My month has been good. Likewise, haven't been doing too much since we did discuss our Elden Ring, sort of. I'll just go into the other game that I'm playing. That is not Final Fantasy XIV, because no one wants to hear me go off about how I or whatever the nonsense I do in that game. I'm still not paying for it, by the way. I am still mooching that free trial.
Sure.
But the real thing I will talk about is that I'm playing Kingsfield 2 now. This is mostly for that wiki dot that I'm somewhat contributing to, but I've gotten a little slacking off on that since I got caught up playing it. You know, I need to play in Japanese initially, so, you know, that's going to be practice for me. I'm not too far in it right now. I'm only on the first level. I don't know how many floors it has in total. The first Kingsfield had 5. Maybe they expanded it for the second one. But I can just say, from moving on to the sequel, I think it's neat how they kind of have it start off at a shore where the first game was very constrained into like a dungeonous cave area. So just seeing how From Software, their second game, just kind of wanted to branch out, and it's still on a first-person dungeon-moving perspective, but I just like the idea of From Software, you know, playing around with that very basic technology and then expanding on it. So there hasn't been too many changes lately than the environment and, like, some new enemies. And I can't say much because I just started it, but I'm looking forward to any new additions they make.
This is the Kingsfield that was released over here?
Yeah, so this is the Kingsfield that was released here, so this would be Kingsfield 1 US, and this is, yeah, 2 right. Japan.
Okay. Yeah, I did play this one a little bit way back in the day, but, I mean, that's just, like, in the ether now. I don't really remember that much, but...
Well, yeah. Maybe it's time for you to replay the Kingsfield game, Matt, because they're pretty cool, I think. Sonic the Hedgehog CD, released for the Sega CD in 1993, follows a simple story of our hero Sonic going to the extraterrestrial body Little Planet to stop Dr. Eggman's evil plans. Little Planet is home of the 7 Time Stones, and Eggman has been using the planet's special temporal passages to manipulate the past. First Sonic game we've ever discussed on this very lengthy podcast. We have to start somewhere. So, Matt, what is your history with the Sonic series? In brief, don't make it too fast, though, and this game in particular.
Obviously, I was mostly Nintendo consoles as a kid, so my most experience with Sonic the Hedgehog as a kid was either at a cousin's house or at a friend's house, and it was mostly with Sonic the Hedgehog 2. Now, I didn't really play the other games extensively until I bought a Genesis secondhand years later and got most of these games just by virtue of, you know, remembering that Sonic 2 was quite good. Also played one of the Game Gear games way back then as well. That was interesting. That was the Game Gear intro for me as well. But since then, I've played the classic series Sonic the Hedgehog, Sonic the Hedgehog 2, CD, 3, and Knuckles, and the combined Sonic 3D Blast. I played the Advance games, Advance 1, 2, and 3, and Sonic R, and Sonic Adventure 1 and 2, and I'm sure there's a few that I'm not mentioning. Generally, like, I don't have any opinion about, like, I know we joked about Sonic 2006 in the intro. I don't really have an opinion on the game because I didn't play it. I haven't really played the 3D games just because I'm not really as interested in 3D platformers as I am in 2D platformers, but I really enjoy the classic Sonic games. And for Sonic CD in particular, I own it on Sega CD, the disc, and I also own it on a, like, an old PC collection of the Genesis games and Sonic CD. So I've played through it before. This is the first time I've played through it with a good ending. And yeah, I was happy to play through it again for the podcast.
Likewise, I also had Nintendo consoles growing up, so my only access to a Sega console was through a friend. And I remember she had Sonic 1 and 2. And gonna be honest, I wasn't really wild about them, but I didn't completely dislike Sonic. There was the cartoon that was airing at the time, and I recall watching it. It was probably Adventures, but my Sonic history is extremely bad. I am so bad at any Sonic knowledge. I actually did mention in this chaos flow that I would not research up any Sonic just to show how little I know about Sonic because I'm so out of it. Since Sonic as a series has just been such a big thing for years, it's never really left me, so I've always been somewhat aware of it through friends who did enjoy the series. I didn't really get to sit down and appreciate a Sonic game until much later on when I got to play Sonic 3 and then the really cool Sonic 3 and Knuckles. I tried to get into more Sonic games then because I was dating someone who really liked the series, so I tried to get into Sonic Advance and more of the other 2D ones, and that's where my first exposure to Sonic CD was. And I don't recall if I ever cleared Sonic CD at that point, but I did play some of the levels. So yeah, Sonic has just been like this thing that's just sort of been around that I never really got to play much of.
Right.
Otherwise, the reason why I said Silver is my favorite Sonic character. Knuckles is still cool, by the way. Out of, like, you know, the original cast, Knuckles is the coolest. Okay, he's got his whole rap and everything, but this is not a Sonic 3 and Knuckles podcast. I had a friend of a friend who did work for Archie Comics. I got to, like, read some of the Sonic stuff, and at that point they were doing some of the newer Sonic characters, so Silver was there. And from my experience, I'm like, you know, I like Silver. You know, he's like he's a good boy. He wants to do good. He's just a little naive. But this is not a podcast about newer Sonic characters. It's Sonic CD. And I should also mention that I haven't really played a lot of Sonic 3D games. I've only, again, played like three Sonic games that are mostly 2D.
Yeah. I don't really have a frame of reference for Silver, honestly. I do for Blaze, of course, from Sonic Rush, and they're sort of BFFs.
Yeah, yeah.
It should be mentioned, particularly with Sonic CD, I didn't know anybody with a Sega CD back in the day, and Sonic CD is sort of niche to people that would have had a Sega CD, right? Especially then, and then it had a PC release, of course, but as a kid back then, I was doing mostly console gaming, and I knew nobody with a Sega CD, and Sonic CD was sort of the, you know, killer app for the Sega CD, and that's, I guess that's why people would have bought it for it, right? Yeah, I didn't even know Sonic CD was a thing as a kid. It's just that the Sega CD just didn't have any presence in my community. Is the PSN release the, like, the sort of HD remake of it by Christian Boitet and company?
Yeah, it is. And it also has, like, Playable Tales, which I don't think was a thing originally. Yeah.
Like, Christian Whitehead was also one of the main individuals behind Sonic Mania, which I guess I should have mentioned in my exposure to Sonic series, because Sonic Mania, for anyone who enjoyed the classic Sonic games, is a treat. But Sonic Mania was an interesting point because it was a lot of the fan game community behind Sonic the Hedgehog fan games. And not super familiar with that scene. I was friends with a couple of people that had their own sort of fan games ongoing. So I saw a few things. And, like, the people that tried to replicate the engine for the Sonic the Hedgehog or the Sonic Advance games or, like, the original Genesis games really made some of these things work, like Click Fusion and Game Maker and such. So, like, they were super passionate about creating games in that vein. So it's interesting that, like, Christian Whitehead helped to get this PSN, Steam, etc. version, the HD version of Sonic CD, and then later with other people from the Sonic community were able to create a fan game, like an official fan game, as liked as Sonic Mania is. So yeah, it's just an interesting side point.
So the main mechanic of Sonic CD is the time traveling. Matt, would you like to sort of explain how that works?
So yeah, I guess there's a certain temporal instability on the little planet where you can travel back and forth in time.
I don't think that's really ever properly explained other than, hey, you can travel through time.
No, yeah, it's not. Well, at least not in the North American manual. It's not. It just kind of says that Little Planet has that capability. But Little Planet, I think it's also called Miracle Planet in other sources, right? It appears once, like for 1 month every year. And Eggman, or Robotnik, I guess we'll call him Eggman, because that's his current name. He wants to harness the power of these time stones, presumably to exert that influence outside of Little Planet. But,
you know, his usual thing, world domination, etc., etc.
I would say that Sonic CD, the stages are fairly quick to get through. There's not as many badniks as even Sonic the Hedgehog, for the most part. But the big challenge that comes with Sonic CD is this time travel, because if you hit a signpost that says future or past, then you get that card, and then you can build up speed and you'll start to flash or leave a flashing trail behind you. And if you can maintain your speed uninterrupted for, I think it's like 3 seconds, you will travel to a past or future version of the act that you're in. And part of the challenge of the game is to know or recognize when you can build up the speed, because if you get almost there and then you fumble it, then you lose that particular signpost. You have to find another one. And that's more where the challenge of the game comes in.
I would say the first challenge is finding the signpost, because you definitely want to go to the past first. You almost never want to go to a bad future.
No.
Unless you just want to check it out. It does provide some music that is different from the rest.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you want to go to the past to find Eggman's generators. Yep. And like, there's holograms of Metal Sonic, which I think the implication is that that's why all the things are attacking you, because they think you're Metal Sonic. But anyway, the point is you're trying to destroy the generators in the past to get a good future. And first of all, you have to find the past signpost. And I think generally the past signposts can be more hidden than the future ones.
Sometimes, yeah.
So that's the first challenge, yeah. And then, yes, as a second challenge is building up the speed, or finding a place to build up the speed before going through the signpost.
I think the future signs are sometimes actually there as a trap, because sometimes you are just sailing through them and you realize, oh no, I got to stop, or I'm going to go to the future and it's not a good future yet.
Yeah.
So you have to find these enemy generators in the past, and if you do, then instead of having a bad future, there's a good future if you destroy this, where there's no badniks, and there's still hazards, but there's no badniks. Alternatively, to get the good ending, you either get all of the good futures, or you get all 7 time stones, which is also a challenge. Time stones, like Chaos Emeralds, they're achieved similar to the other Sonic games in that you get to the goal with 50 rings and you can jump into a special stage and attempt to get a time stone, there's a special stage, which we'll talk about later. They get progressively harder. You get all the time stones and you're guaranteed to have a good ending. That's what the time stones do in this case, similar to like the Chaos Emeralds in Sonic the Hedgehog 1, I think, were necessary for the good ending.
Things off with the first zone, Palm Tree Panic. I will start off this cast with a hot take that this is just awfully like Green Hill Zone. Are a lot of Sonic first stages just trying to emulate Green
Hill? Not a hot take.
Okay, well, fine.
Yeah.
That being said, as an opener level, I think it's fine. It has the very basic, like, here is a cool place where you can do a loop, and like, it's green and has the very basics which you expect from a Sonic starting stage, but again, it was a fine opening.
Yeah, I mean, most Sonic the Hedgehog games, at least at the time, start off with a Green Hill style zone. There's obviously Green Hill Zone in Sonic the Hedgehog, and then Emerald Hill Zone in Sonic 2. Angel Island in
Sonic 3.
Sonic 3 is a bit different because it does some different things, but it's still like a lush zone. And then Mushroom Hill is sort of the analog in Sonic and Knuckles, but again, it does different things. In Sonic CD, I think it was developed in tandem, or near the same time as Sonic the Hedgehog 2. It makes sense that the favorite stage from Sonic the Hedgehog 1 at Green Hill Zone would sort of be emulated in these two. But I think Palm Tree Panic does a lot unique to it. I mean, in terms of the level, it's a starter zone, and it's good in that respect. But I think the flavor of it's sufficiently different from Green Hill Zone, especially if you go to either of the futures.
And the good thing about Palm Tree Panic is the signposts aren't really too hidden. It's supposed to introduce you to this whole mechanic. Right. There's lots of long ways where you can build up speed. So, yeah, definitely it gives you a good opening about how the time travel mechanic works. And if you only go after the special stages, it's the opening one, so it's not too difficult to get those 50 rings and not get smacked by something.
Yeah, it's pretty accommodating.
Yeah, I guess there's a Eggman boss, but
punchy guy, yeah.
Not a boss worth talking about.
I suppose not. I like the design. I like the design and the concept of a lot of the bosses in this game, but I think they're maybe the weakest point. Aside from Stardust Speedway, I think they're generally the weakest component of the game is the bosses. But I think the design and concept is cool. I just think the execution leaves a bit to be desired. So this is sort of a punchy Robotnik, but I don't think I ever got punched by it. So
I think you might have a more positive reception to the concepts than I do. I think the bosses were just pretty forgettable for the most part. So, but yeah, speaking of getting those 50 rings in the special stages, do you want to also just quickly go over them if you're good at Sonic and can actually get all those UFOs or whatever they may be?
Yeah, so it's sort of a pseudo 3D behind the back kind of chasing after these UFOs in an arena, kind of like the Mario Kart battle mode stages in the SNES game, sort of that kind of layout, but you have to jump into these.
Not Mode 7 or whatever the Sega equivalent of that is.
No, I don't think it's Mode 7, but it's trying to emulate it or do the same thing, right? The depth perception on these UFOs is a little off, so you kind of have to get a feeling for when to jump into them, because otherwise, if you don't learn how to qualitatively feel it out, it's difficult to hit them. But I think the stages are pretty fun. I was pretty competent at them. The later ones get really difficult, because if you go out of the track, like on water, you rapidly lose time. At least in those ones, there's a blue UFO that can show up, and you can bop that to get extra time once the time is down far enough. But they get pretty hectic towards the end, and you get some pretty wild backgrounds towards the end, but you just hit 6 UFOs and you get a time stone. Now, because this is just at the end of every zone, because they're not acts, I guess, it's at the end of every level, it has a proper goal.
I'm probably going to call them acts anyway, because that seems to be Sonic standard.
You get less chances than, say, the giant rings in Sonic 3 and Knuckles. But I think generally it's easier to master these than it is some of the later blue spheres. So it kind of evens out. They're still pretty hectic and they still get pretty challenging. Like I said, the game's not really that hard, except if you're trying to go for a level of completion, which is, I think if you've played through the Sonic games a few times, that's probably what you're going to do if you play one. So they're definitely a decent bonus stage. There's some hiccups to them, but I think they're pretty solid.
Or you could also be not so great at Sonic games and miss 2 of UFOs and run out of time, but that's okay. Maybe that person will replay Sonic CD and do better next time.
If this is the first time you played a Sonic game in, a long time.
Well, it wasn't. Yeah. Well, I guess that's okay. A long time, fine. Okay, I'll give you that.
No, I wasn't saying it was your first one, but it's been a while.
To sort of go on a digression, what were the special stages like in 1 and 2 again? Were they of a similar nature?
Oh, no, definitely not. Definitely not.
Okay.
So in Sonic the Hedgehog 1, you're in a rotating room as a ball, and you have to break through gems to reach the Chaos Emerald, like, in the center. And, like, you can, if you're, you can change the way that the room is rotating. It's, like, constantly cycling around. You can change it to back, or if you fall into a goal, instead of getting the Chaos Emerald, you're kicked out of the stage without it. So that was later repurposed into a slot machine minigame in Sonic 3 and Knuckles. But
yeah, that's why that sounded familiar, yeah.
In Sonic 2 is the one I'm the fucking worst at. If you're in a half pipe and you have to gather rings, and if you don't have a certain amount of rings by the time you hit a checkpoint, then you're kicked out of the stage. And I didn't realize this until I was watching about it recently, is that if you have Tails with you, so if you would play a Sonic and Tails, you need more rings to get through, and Tails gets hit a lot because you're not controlling him. So I think the next time I play Sonic the Hedgehog 2, it's going to be a Sonic, and I'm going to get the Chaos Emeralds a lot easier. But that's another pseudo 3D kind of running in a half pipe thing. It's weird, but yeah, I personally find that one pretty tricky. For the Chaos Emeralds, the special stage is Blue Spheres in 3 and Knuckles, and that's on a grid, so it's sort of pseudo 3D, but it's still on the grid, so you're turning on the grid in it. So it's a lot more precise than what they're doing in Sonic CD. Basically, you touch every blue sphere, or if you do the perimeter of the blue spheres, they all turn into rings, so there's ways around it. But you collect every blue sphere in the stage, and then you get a Chaos Emerald. And it has a cool song. So, yeah.
Yeah. The special stages always seem like a very interesting way to diversify the gameplay of a Sonic game, because it is like a 2D platformer for the most part, and then you go into this sort of pseudo 3D thing, which changes up the gameplay, which I think is neat. And the fact that they changed it for each of these mainline early Sonic games seems really neat. So I like the way the UFOs is laid out, although because the only one I remember is Blue Spheres right now. Yeah, that was also good too. But yeah, so it's cool that they have these like different versions of the special stages, and in Sonic CD it works out well. Even if I did miss this 2 of UFOs or land in the water.
Well, it's not easy, but yeah. It's definitely learnable. Like, it's definitely learnable to figure out a line to take. Because I think the UFOs go the same way all the time, right?
Yeah, like your momentum and distance, you just gotta get used to that.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of got better at them as I went on through the game, but then it was also a matter of the fact that they do get more hectic in later ones. So the next zone is Collision Chaos. From my recollection of Sonic games, these pinball type of stages usually show up later on in the game. But how does it adjust with the game flow, it being the second zone in Sonic CD?
I guess they're usually mid-game. Casino Night Zone's not that far into Sonic the Hedgehog 2. But I guess comparing Casino Night to Collision Chaos, Casino Night has only one kind of enemy, and it's basically a dude with a shield, and he basically just acts as another kind of bumper. So Collision Chaos is actually easier to die in than Casino Night. But it is, I was going to say it's a tonal shift, but like every stage of Sonic CD is sort of a tonal shift, because they kind of went wild with how busy the backgrounds are and how different the colors.
It's true. And they had to make multiple backgrounds as well. Yeah.
So I kind of like that it's here. It makes you wonder, like, if Collision Chaos is in the, like, because even if you go into the past, there's still pinball elements. So who on Little Planet is making all these things? Or is it because of Eggman's influence, right?
Maybe, but, like, the generators produce those pinball things in the...
I don't think it really interrupts with the flow, because it is one of the more interesting stages because of all of these pinball elements, the flippers and the bumpers and all of that. And a lot of complaints with early Sonic the Hedgehog, like the first game, you go from a relatively fast zone like Green Hill Zone to a zone where you do a lot of waiting, like Marble Zone has a lot of waiting. So I think they wanted to keep the game sort of more proactive. And although there's points in Collision Chaos, especially where you have to break through those like little red bumpers,
right?
Where you're in the same place for a long time, I think it does propel you forward pretty well. And the whole casino or pinball machine, it kind of works with the exploration aspect of Sonic CD anyhow, because you're kind of interesting ways to reach new heights. Sonic CD super heavily relies on springs, so for there to be bumpers and things like that is refreshing. I think perhaps this could have been a few levels in to be a refresher, but I like it.
I would agree with you that I think it's fine where it is as a second zone, but with the usual pacing of Sonic games, it is usually placed in like the middle for a refresher, because It has like the different elements, and I don't know, maybe I'm just really bad at flippers, but I can never get Sonic's momentum correct to actually launch half of the time. But nevertheless, I mean, I just do think it's fun. I always think that the pinball slash casino type stage designs of Sonic always look neat to me. If there's anything to go to the bad future for, I think it actually looks pretty cool in my opinion. I think a lot of the backgrounds in Sonic CD are neat, like in all versions, like the past looks kind of cool. I guess in relation to the past, it always looks like a more muted color palette compared to the present, and then of course the good and bad futures are going to have some wildly different palettes to them. But yeah, I don't know, the bad one looks pretty cool. I mean, the good one, you know, it's like nice to see that it's more environmental, which is like a big theme of Sonic, especially in CD, where, you know, the good future would not have such heavy machinery and like decay, and it's more green and so on. But yeah, just for the cool backgrounds and just the change of music, you know, it's pretty neat to explore the different options in this game.
I will say the pinball boss was one of the few that I like really had memories of when I got back to it. And it's just navigating an actual pinball machine at that point, because when you get to the boss, it's just hit it 3 times and the machine is destroyed, right? But
Very not traditional, but
yeah.
as a concept, I think it's cool.
I like that
In a
though.
way, you don't even realize it's a boss, so it's neat.
Yeah. Because they do have a little bit of level before you get to a boss in Act 3 anyway, so yeah, the level is actually the boss. I like that. It's
It's
fun.
neat. I like it, yeah. So Collision Chaos is pretty neat. Next up is Tidal Tempest, the mandatory aquatic zone for a Sonic game. Also, in my recollection, it seems to be a bit easier to navigate because I usually feel a bit pressured about being underwater, but in this case, I did not. If you're exploring to look for those signposts, it's not too bad because I think
Yeah.
a good deal of them are actually above the water, so you won't feel too stressed about that.
The bubbles are pretty plentiful too.
Yeah, I guess it's just a little labyrinthine, but not
Yeah,
too bad, I think.
it's funny you use that word because the water zone in Sonic the Hedgehog, Labyrinth Zone,
Yeah, I was gonna say it's like Labyrinth Zone, isn't
yeah,
it? Yeah.
is it has a very similar aesthetic, at least to the present of Tidal Tempest. And Labyrinth Zone is pretty brutal if you're not used to underwater in Sonic the Hedgehog, especially Sonic 1, where you don't have a spin dash or the super peel out or anything like that. So it was a fairly notorious zone in Sonic 1, so I think Tidal Tempest was sort of the do-over for Labyrinth Zone. I mean, I'm kind of the outlier that I like Labyrinth Zone.
Well, I wouldn't remember, so.
Yeah, so I like Tidal Tempest actually, and I gotta say, for both soundtracks, Tidal Tempest that might have my favorite music because it's like really fitting in the Japanese version, and then the North American version is extremely groovy. It's really cool and really chill. So I gotta give Tidal Tempest some props.
I'll leave my soundtrack opinions till later in
Yeah.
the cast so when we have a real hot discussions about that.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty standard underwater stage. The one thing that threw me off in Tidal Tempest was I don't think there's a panic soundtrack for when you're about to drown.
No, there isn't. There isn't one in Japanese either.
Which might be why you weren't panicking so much, because once you get that countdown noise, it does, like, you know.
You get 5 seconds, but it feels
Yeah.
like 5 milliseconds.
The boss, I actually did take a couple hits on this because of greed. I think this is probably the Eggman boss that hit me the most, honestly. But it has a pattern that once you get it down, you'll never get hit. But yeah, it was mostly greed that got me for
You know, some people are good at Sonic games and get hit at all at this boss, but
it.
it's not exactly a memorable Eggman boss. He's just surrounded by bubbles and he launches projectiles, which, you know, some days you're just not feeling it and you get hit by them, I guess. So
Yeah.
the fourth zone is Quartz Quadrant, which looks really pretty, and I have no other recollection of it. I guess it just exists to look pretty.
Yeah, well, this is also the one that I remember the least about. I think there's some conveyor belts and there's like some falling rocks and other kind of cave hazards, but yeah, this is probably my least favorite level in the game. I hate to be that guy on the podcast to say that, but it is, it's like a pretty stage, but like, I think they could have done some more elements to it to make it, like, in later games when you have, like, machines drilling through the ceiling, through the floor and stuff like that. But this is still quite early into Sonic the Hedgehog, and there's levels like this that are sort of non-starters in Sonic 1. And, you know, so I guess it follows, but I think it's, yeah, it is what it is, I guess.
I'd have to agree, because I also barely remember anything about this stage other than it kind of looked pretty. So it probably just has lots of springs, which Sonic CD has, and conveyor belts, which might be a little too excessive, but yeah.
Well, the boss is a conveyor belt even, right? So
yeah, oh, and the boss is a conveyor belt, you're right, yeah.
Which, again, I like the concept of the boss, because Sonic 1 had so-so bosses as well, and Eggman attacks in a piston in, like, the final zone of that as well. But I like that you have to run on the treadmill to heat up the bottom of the piston that he's in. That's cool, but again, it's not a very engaging fight. It's a cool idea, but yeah.
Is that what's happening in Quartz Quadrant? Because I don't know, I just feel like you just dodge the ball he drops, and then after some time, the piston breaks on itself. So you don't even actually have to jump on Eggman at the right time. It's just
I guess what they're going for is that Sonic is running so fast on this treadmill that it's causing so much friction underneath the piston that Eggman's in, right?
I guess. It was an interesting boss in some weird way.
I'll have to make a Soul-style lore video on all of the Eggman
you
in this
should.
Game, so.
You really should. And I try to come up with some good things to say about, oh, and the good future and the bad future look, but I don't know. I think it just looks pretty, I guess. Let's move on to the next zone, which is Wacky Workbench, which is such a strange, strange name. I think I like it, and I think it's dumb. I'm not sure.
like you said, we mentioned that the other day, and I think I can agree that it can be both dumb and really clever.
Like, why workbench, not workshop? Yeah. You're right.
But I like Wacky Workbench. This is where the game starts to get some teeth, because like, you can get through Wacky Workbench really quickly if you're just going for the goal, but if you're looking for those signposts, this game has a lot of verticality because of the bouncy floor.
Yeah, and which is pretty weird, but
yeah,
it's pretty wacky. Kind of a cool... Yeah. Thanks, Matt. This also has more hazards. There are, like, the electrified fence kind of things, or electrified wires, and then you also have the pistons, which can crush you. Mm-hmm. So it's not something you can necessarily just slam through, but if you're looking for the post, they are definitely pretty well hidden, in my opinion. Or at least trying to find the right spot to build up the speed to time travel after hitting the post.
Yeah, finding out how to build up the speed is definitely a factor there. And you're talking about the electrified wires in the background, or whatever they're supposed to be, barriers, I guess. That's the major hazard, because you're bouncing so fast and so high on the floor that you can just slam into that stuff, right? So I think when I say you can just slam through a level, you're also taking into account the ring system in Sonic games, because it's really difficult. If you just want to clear a stage, it's really difficult to just die unless you get crushed. Again, if you're going for, you know, actually playing Sonic CD, you're going to be trying to at least maintain some parameters to what you want to accomplish in each stage. And I think that's, for me, if I were to be looking for the signposts in Wacky Workbench as well as the Badnik generators, that would be the most confusing thing for me, is to navigate the stage with a goal other than the end signpost in mind.
Did you also find that weird angel statue that's somewhere randomly hidden in I think it's Act 2.
I don't think I did.
I only know about this because there is a trophy about it for some reason, but I guess it's one of those weird Easter eggs that just happen to show up. I think it offers you rings, which is neat.
See, at this point, I had all the time stones, so I was kind of playing through the levels to get from point A to point B, but that's interesting to note. I'll have to keep an eye out for it.
Also, in terms of design, I think the palettes look really cool in all of them. Like, well, I guess the Bad Future is very more brown than I would like it to be, but like, nevertheless, I think the way that they designed it and have all like their pixels look pretty neat. So it's a cool stage to look at, and it has a lot of cool things to look out for.
I don't know if I can say it. I like the concept of the wacky workbench boss.
It's but, just the floor, right? You just make sure you jump at the right time, I guess.
Yeah. I think with a place like Wacky Workbench, you could have been like a big toy soldier or something, right? But anyways. Or
a
train.
There could have been a bouncy floor or something, and then you need to hit Eggman up in the air from extreme verticality or something. I don't know.
Like Sonic had to put some change and keys in his pockets and get inside the bouncy castle.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
So we're moving on to Stardust Speedway, which is arguably the fastest stage in this game.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of stages are pretty exploration heavy, but this one is just to go on those rails and go really fast. I think it's pretty easy to warp here, even unintentionally, because of that.
There's like a lot of loop back areas.
Yeah.
A lot of the levels have these little areas that are like two springs or something that are there specifically for you to gain and maintain speed without any effort. So there's a lot of those, or a lot of areas at least that you can accomplish that in Stardust Speedway, I guess, I should say.
I'm trying to remember a lot of the hazards in Stardust Speedway, but I guess it's just like enemy placement because of your speed, and then you need to make sure you get them at the right angle, or else you'll lose your rings.
There's some spikes and all that, but yeah.
Yeah. It's a very nice looking stage as well, I think, in all variations.
Yeah, it's about, like I said, it's about speed. And I guess the biggest hazard is there's a lot of things, again, that force you backwards. And that's more what the stage is about. But yeah, it is very pretty.
Probably the most memorable thing about Stardust Speedway is the boss, which is the race against Metal Sonic.
Now, I died several times to this.
Yeah, so did I.
And I've done, like I said, I've done this race before, and I've done the other Metal Sonic races before, but it is definitely the highlight boss of the game, the best part of the game, and, you know, there is a level of tension to it, and, like, you're out, he's always gaining or passing you, and you have to know when to let him pass and when you should gain on him.
Let Metal Sonic pass when there's spikes upcoming, because he'll just destroy him, so you can let him destroy him, then you can jump ahead of him.
So my
but you can't fall back too far behind because Eggman is chasing you with a giant laser beam that will instantly kill you.
So this is the point of the game I think has the most tension to it. And I think it was either my first or second attempt at it. He got into the goal before me, and I died because of that.
Oh, that happened to me too. I was like, oh, but to be so close.
The other couple times I died is because I lost my acceleration on a slope. And, you know, I couldn't rev up the super PLO fast enough to get up over the slope. But, yeah, it's definitely the more challenging part of the game. Like anything in Sonic the Hedgehog, once you get down the route and sort of the timing for everything, it becomes a lot easier, of course. But coming back to this after so long, it was definitely refreshing to have to do this again. It's good.
I think one of the more challenging things about the race as well is that Metal Sonic does, like, a power-up. It's not Super Sonic, but, you know, he has that sort of, like, building up power animation. And then I've always run into him at the wrong time, and that's where I lose my momentum.
Yeah.
And now we're moving on to the last zone, Metallic Madness, which you have brought up is also in Sonic Mania. Can't wait, because this was my roughest stage yet. It is the final one, so it is justified, but there are a lot of hazards here. There are the pistons you need to time, and then there's also like this huge chasm, I think, in Act 1 that you just need to time the springs correctly, or just get the correct momentum and just not fall off and mess up the jump kind of thing.
I would say this is probably where the enemies are the most difficult as well. Like the stag beetles that have a buzzsaw instead of a stag beetle horn, and the I don't know if I consider them enemies or not, because you can't destroy them. There's these sort of poles that go back and forth that have propellers on them, and they alternate between a low propeller and a high propeller. And getting past them when you're just trying to move can usually catch you.
I couldn't even time the regular saws, so like everything just hit me at this. It was amazing how I even had one ring at the end of it.
So, I mean, I could compare this level directly to a similar level from Sonic 2, Metropolis Zone, but Metropolis Zone has a lot of sort of gotcha moments in it, whereas this one doesn't. So I think Metallic Madness is a more competent zone in that respect, because there are a lot of different elements to Metallic Madness, especially for a game that, like, aside from Wacky Workbench, hasn't had a lot of the gimmicks in each stage. Like, the game relied heavily on springs for a lot of us. And then all of a sudden in Metallic Madness, there's a lot of things to navigate. And I like this level. I think it's good that there's a challenging last level, because that's what it should be. There's a lot of things to play around in this level. For some reason, you could turn small.
Yeah. For some reason, you can turn small.
I think it's a great stage, personally, but, you know.
I like it a lot, too, because it's pretty navigation-heavy, especially Zone 2. I do appreciate just how it's more hazardous and less jump on the spring and figure out where else to go from there.
It still has moments of speed, though. Like, a lot of people...
I mean, they all do, because even at this point, I think you could still get past and future for...
Yes. Like, a lot of people complain about the stop-and-go gameplay of Sonic the Hedgehog with the Genesis games. But people also complain about the advanced games being too much hold right to win, just run through them.
Sonic Rush.
I think people just like to complain about Sonic the Hedgehog, is my honest opinion on that. But I do like some, you know, stop and think critically moments in Sonic the Hedgehog, and even Metallic Madness, once you get used to it and what the hazards are and how to circumvent them quickly, of course you can go through them faster. And that's where, like, the replay of a Sonic game will come from. Like, I don't think a kid, and of course there will be exceptions, just because there's always exceptions, the first time they played Sonic CD in 1993 or 1992, whatever it was, I don't think they got all of the generators and all of the time stones their first time through it. You're going to replay the game, and you're going to find ways to get through things more quickly, or to maintain that, you know, speed that the character is touted for. So even Metallic Madness would succumb to that at some point. Shame about the boss, but it's a great stage.
You know, I had more trouble with the boss before Eggman. For some reason, you could never find the right frame to hit those light bulb things. I don't know what it was.
Oh, the fireflies, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're interesting. They're pretty cool.
I think it's an interesting boss, but I just wish I knew what the window was to hit them, because I think it'd be like after they shot the laser, that's when you can just jump onto them. But no, I would miss them most of the time. So speedrun happening for me anytime soon? I don't think so. Yeah, with the final boss, Eggman. He's like in a big plus sign shaped aircraft device. And yeah, he kind of fires off the wings at you. And you take off the wings one at a time. Not much to say. But
well,
it did, I mean, have
I got,
music.
I got hit. But like,
well, I also got hit too, but it wasn't very interesting.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's more because it's the final boss. Like, this would have been an interesting boss in a previous stage that maybe had fans in this. Like, maybe the Tidal Tempest Zone, because there's fans in that stage.
Yeah.
But like, you get to the end of of this game, maybe have him in a clock-themed robot and have the battle shift between zones, like between time periods or something, or do something that kind of
reflects
the theme of the game. And I guess that you could argue that the fins on this machine are like the hands of a clock, because they rotate.
I think you're going
but
a little
I'm
too
reaching,
far
yeah.
on that. Yeah.
I mean, like, the final boss of Sonic 1 is pretty non-starter as well, but, like, I guess the series is still finding its feet with regards to that, but for a final boss, not so exciting. For a mid-game boss, it would have been fine.
After that disappointing final boss, depending on if you got all those generators or those time stones, there is a good ending and a bad ending. If you are not very good at finding generators and also not good at getting time stones in those special stages, you'll get the bad ending where the little planet is just doomed. And also, like, what is Eggman, like, flying away with one of the time stones and then Sonic throws a rock? Yeah, I definitely deserve this for doing poorly. But if you get the good ending by getting all the time stones or destroying all the generators, Little Planet can be a happy miracle planet once more. And Amy is safe, by the way, who we never mentioned on this podcast.
Yeah, Amy's safe. I was about to say, we never mentioned Amy this whole podcast.
But that was Sonic CD.
That was Sonic CD.
Okay, Matt, it's the time for our point of division on the AgroCast podcast. The Japanese versus the U.S. soundtrack. Which one do we like more?
This might be a super hot take, but...
I started off with some hot takes, Matt, so...
This isn't a hot take. I think they're both good soundtracks, and this is not just me trying to be diplomatic. I think the difference between the Japanese and the U.S. soundtracks is that the U.S. or North American soundtrack is trying to be atmospheric based on the levels, and the Japanese soundtrack sounds like a Sonic game. And that's the main difference. So for certain levels, like Collision Chaos, I think is better in Japan, and Metallic Madness is way better in Japan, and Palm Tree Panic is better in Japan. I think generally playing a Sonic game, they're more fitting, but the North American soundtrack, they try to take the tone of the setting and make music around that. And I don't know why they would have put in all these extra resources to make new music for the game. My personal theory, and I don't know if this has been proven anywhere or not, is that because in Sat AM, the Saturday morning Sonic cartoon, it's quite dark and it's about freedom fighters and environmentalism and all that. And in that cartoon, Robotnik has taken over Mobius, which is the spin-off planet for the Sonic universe. And there's like heavy industrialization and quite a bit of a dark overtone to that particular series for a kid's cartoon. And I think that they were trying to make it maybe a little more relatable to that, potentially. Because I think Sonic Spinball is quite heavily influenced by that as well, in terms of its themes. But, like, even the way that Eggman laughs in the boss track for the North American version is a bit more dire than the really sort of high-energy boss theme in Japan with, like, a more... it's a different kind of laugh, right? And I think both of them are good soundtracks and have good music to them, but I think that the Mega CD version definitely has like a more Sonic the Hedgehog sound to it. However, like Sonic CD itself, this soundtrack is still quite different than the rest of the series. So it has more of what you would expect from the series, but it's still quite different because, again, this game is quite different. Also, they share past themes, so there's, like, no argument there.
I agree that a lot of the American tracks match the flavor of the level design. Because when I first experienced Sonic CD, it was the Japanese soundtrack on, so that one has stuck with me more. And personal preference, I do like the Japanese soundtrack more. Not that the American one is bad. It's just that I do prefer the Japanese one, and I think that definitely is a thing that The Japanese track sounds more like a Sonic game to me, which is why I would prefer it, other than personal taste. Again, like, the American one is fine, especially with, like, how it tries to match the levels, but listening to them separately just doesn't feel like a Sonic game to me. And yeah, Sonic CD is a weird and different game, but I think the American release is just a little too detached for me. That being said, there are definitely tracks where I like both of them from, like, different things. You like the American tracks for Palm Tree Panic. I don't know. The Japanese one's a little too happy for me, even though that is the intention.
Yeah.
It's just a bit too much. The title one is pretty good for the good future, but it's so rock heavy, which just does not feel like a Sonic game for me. Again, yeah. So it's just like a lot of ones that are fine, but I don't know. It's just too much for me that I expect from Sonic CD, especially for what I expect for Sonic soundtrack for games of this era. And I really like the boss theme for the Japanese one. It's so catchy. That one is always got stuck in my head for a long time. I love it a lot. That being said, I do prefer the American opening. But the Japanese one is not bad, but the American one is a lot better, in my opinion. It's just a really good song.
Well, to me, Sonic Boom, at least for sort of the first bit of it, it seems like it's paced with the animation. And You Can Do Anything just seems like it's thrown on over the animation. And I think I don't mind You Can Do Anything. I don't really like the introduction to it, which I'm sure I would like if I heard a 3-minute version of the song rather than an intro-length version of the song. Because the whole Toot Toot Sonic Warrior part of the song is quite catchy, right? And if it was more of that, I think I'd like the song more. But Sonic Boom is such a good song, at least, and it's a product of the time as well, Sonic Boom, but like, it's such a good song that goes with the animation and what the animation is trying to tell. So yeah, I like that quite a bit.
So we're not completely coming to blows, but yeah, I mean, I think they both have their merits. I just prefer the Japanese one overall. So hey, if you get the PSN release, you can just switch them. So there you go.
So Tidal Tempest has my favorite songs on both sides, but I think I like the North American DTF funk for the present, like as a song better, but of course, the whole exploring an underwater ruin fits better with the Japanese present theme. So it's a difficult thing to parse out unless you go through every single track, because, you know, if you're talking about quality of the track in a vacuum, it's different than talking, but in context of the game, and it depends on what you want. Like Sonic CD is like, if you look at Collision Chaos, it has a completely different feeling in the North American version than in the Japanese version. Like the Japanese version, I think is a bit more like, yeah, you're coming to into a slot machine. And the US one is like post-apocalypse kind of stuff. It's like US one's a lot more somber. And yeah, I think it depends on what you want, but contextually, do you want atmosphere, or contextually, do you want a Sonic game, right? So I think that's where you make your choice.
And as you said, the past tracks are the same, so you can't argue there. Personally, I'm not actually too wild on the past tracks. I don't know, I feel like they're just missing that extra something. I know they're just like a different variation of the present, but something about that past missing that.
And unfortunately, you're going to be spending most of the time in the past.
As another point of division among some Sonic fans, how do we feel about this game's slower and more exploration focus rather than speed?
I'm fine with it. This game is still faster than Sonic 1 in most cases. But again, I've read that it was developed in tandem with Sonic 2, so the series is still finding its foot. I like that it's an experimental game. I like that it's not the same as Sonic the Hedgehog 2. And I like that it has its own identity. I wouldn't mind playing another more exploration-based Sonic game. That's fine by me. It's more that I wouldn't want to see the whole time period thing repeated too many times. But it's a good game, and like the mechanics don't break in it. So I still think there's moments of speed. And again, if you're playing these games for just that instant gratification, It's what some of the titles try to do, and people also don't like that when it's just too much speed, right? It's just like the game's handing the goal to you. So I think it has a, maybe not a good balance, but I think the way that it does is good and fun, and it does its own thing, and it's maintained its own identity, you know, 30 years later. So there is that, right? And when I go back to play entries in a long-running series, it's refreshing when you have options that differ mechanically and differ in pace, because it's not just like replaying the same thing again and again.
With my limited Sonic experience and just focusing on Sonic CD as a whole, I do like the balance of exploration and speed that Sonic CD has. There are more exploration heavies compared to the rest of the stages. And then there are definitely stages that are more focused on speed, like the Speedway. But I think it does do a good balance of trying to find the right spot to gain speed to do the time traveling mechanic, and then also trying to explore how big the Sonic stages are. Because I think that's also like a neat thing about Sonic games, at least from my experience about the initial, you want to call it 4 or 5, including Knuckles, is that, you know, they have a lot of verticality to them. There's also more underneath from where your starting point is. And there's always like different hiding spots for things. So that's like the neat part about Sonic's exploration. But then there's also the fact that Sonic is supposed to be fast. So there's lots of those loops in place where you can like really blast through things if you wish. And yeah. I think Sonic CD really compacts that into the game really well.
And I mentioned that Sonic CD relies a lot on springs, but some of the later games, even Sonic and Knuckles, have these set pieces that kind of lock you into an animation. You have to watch Sonic do all this stuff that gives the illusion of speed, but by the same token, you've put the controller down at that point, so it's you're sort of just waiting for something to happen. So I think there's two directions that it can go. You can have either not enough interactable elements in the level, and Sonic CD's not bereft of that. Again, Wacky Workbench and Collision Chaos have a lot to interact with, and then Metallic Madness has a lot to kill you. But you can also have so many gimmicks in the stage that take control away from the player that, you know, it gives you the illusion of speed, but you're not actually interacting with the game. So Sonic CD, at the minimum there, you're always at least interacting with the game. If you get stuck in a spring loop, you can always jump out of it whenever you want, right? It's just...
Yeah, yeah. You always have, like, control of Sonic, is what you're saying, from even a moment of speed, yeah. What are actual concluding thoughts about Sonic CD?
I would say Sonic CD was an interesting choice as the first Sonic game for us to cover on the podcast, because it's not the first Sonic game I would recommend people play. That would probably be Sonic the Hedgehog 2, because the levels are usually a bit more approachable than some of the later ones in Sonic 1, and you have the spin dash and all that, and then you can go any direction you want from Sonic 2. But I guess it sort of fits our, you know, ethos in terms of what we select, right? So I'm kind of glad it was Sonic CD, since this is the one I've played the least. And I enjoyed coming back to it. I wouldn't say it's my favorite Sonic game. It's still a good game. And there's things I dislike about it and things I do like about it. Again, I found it kind of easy towards the end after I got the time stones. But at that point, I'd already sort of tackled the difficulty of the game, which is collecting the good ending. So I do like that you can kind of more definitively choose your difficulty with the game, because, you know, I kind of like that. If you just want to blast through it, you can, and if you just want to explore, you can. It becomes a different experience either way you play it. And I like that it's so eclectic in terms of visuals and the music and in concept. I mean, if this was like in the can since the first game, like these ideas, that's a pretty intense shift from the first game to go into all of this time travel stuff. Now, I mentioned that I wouldn't want to see the time travel elements in every game. It's sort of what Sonic Mania does to take you between the zones that you've been through in the past, but you don't actually go to like the past or present of them. It's just the end sort of a mechanic to take you between zones from different games. So time travel showed up in Sonic again, but the whole past and future thing, I'm glad it's in this game. I don't know if I'd necessarily want to interact with that in every Sonic game. I wouldn't mind seeing a Sonic CD 2 that does the same thing, but I'm kind of glad it wasn't like the mechanic that stuck for everything, because I think, well, I'd say that might get tedious, but if they made the past and futures much more drastic changes, it could stay interesting. I just don't think it would have been a very long-lasting mechanic. But by the same token, people often deride Sonic for being a knight or being a werewolf or whatever, but it just shows that even as far back as very beginning of the series, they were wanting to have interesting or different or weird concepts with the character. And I haven't played a lot of the modern games, but I like that at least he's maintained that level of eclecticism, because I mean, if Mario could turn into whatever the fuck he wants and do whatever the hell he wants, then sure as hell Sonic can, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, I guess that's my final thoughts on Sonic CD. Still a good game. Not my favorite Sonic, but I'm glad to revisit it, and I think if someone gets into the series, then they should at least try it out.
With my limited Sonic knowledge, I didn't even realize that Sonic the Hedgehog CD was such a weird choice. But I guess, as you kind of mentioned with our ethos, and I guess my strange personal preferences, Sonic CD was the right one to cover. So, as a game that I had not cleared yet, but I did have experience with, and I did like my experience, which maybe makes me think I should probably look at 1 and 2 once more and see if I'm less strange opinions about those games. For Sonic CD as a whole, like I mentioned, I do like the balance of the exploration and the speed of stages because, again, I don't have a lot of history with Sonic, but I feel like that seems right for me. I don't want a game that is pure speed, and I don't want a game that is too exploration heavy. So Sonic CD gets the right spot. We did complain about the bosses, and I wish those were more experimental or more...
The thing is, they're very experimental. It's just that they're very easy.
I guess they are experimental, but they weren't experiments that worked. So I guess that is the downside to it. At the same time, I do like how a lot of concepts in this game were experimental. Like, the time-traveling mechanic is strange, and I wouldn't want to see it in anything else in a Sonic game. At least the way they explored it here. So, it's such an additional gimmick to me. Like, the whole, like, oh, you can travel to the past and the future is just a roundabout way of saying, like, hey, there are variations of these stages. Mm-hmm. But that, to me, works. So, I like that aspect to it. So, I think it definitely has a lot of elements to it that just seem to be right for me. So, as a Sonic game that I have managed to clear, I'm pretty happy with what we got, and I would like to return to it to get a last. I blasted through the game and did really bad at the special stages. I'd like to get that good ending because things did not go so well for Little Planet on my end. But yeah, I enjoyed Sonic CD. I'm glad I cleared it. Thank you for listening to our podcast. If you'd like to reach me, I am twitter.com/Karasu, CAWRASU. Matt, where can we reach you?
You can reach me at twitter.com/Mattazoic, MATTOZOIC. And it's like the Mesozoic era. Now, you may have heard of the good future. This is the good past because the Mesozoic era, the dinosaurs are better. And unlike Sonic CD, the good past has dinosaurs. Website's the same, mattazoic.com.
And where can you reach our dear horse, Aggro? Who is Aggro's favorite Sonic character, anyway?
Oh. Probably Big the Cat or something. No, like, Arrow would have something like Fang the Sniper or Bark the Polar Bear or something like that.
So would Aggro have a weird choice? I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, well, Fang's not really a weird choice. Bark definitely is, but Arrow would want to be different, so.
Okay.
You can reach Arrow at twitter.com/ArrowCast, AGROCAST.
All right, AgroCast anniversary is next month for April. Matt, what will we be discussing?
We will be discussing Chrono Trigger. Now, we're not necessarily discussing it beat by beat, but we're going to be kind of giving some impressions on the game. It's interesting, we just did a time travel game, we're going to do another one.
It must be a popular video game mechanic or something.
Yeah. We will talk about certain aspects of Chrono Trigger and give our thoughts on them. It's going to be a more loose discussion. I know we always say that, but this is what we're aiming for with this particular podcast. And if we want to keep the time travel stuff going, I guess we'll have to do Ocarina of Time after that.
No, we may have sort of done something similar before, and we're not going there. Yeah.
Anyhow.
Until then, cheers.
Cheers.